buscar un mejor destino para ti, lo que viniera de ti. Tu pueblo, no conoció tu entrega.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Inside the Journey podcast. This is episode number 12 for Sunday, July 21st, 2013. I'm Nelson DeWitt.
And John Younger.
We are the team behind the documentary film Identifying Nelson, Buscando a Roberto. Today, we're going to do something a little different, and we're going to do a review episode. We kind of wanted to go over the episodes that we've done over the past few weeks and months, actually. We've had a lot of great guests and a lot of great shows, and we wanted to give our two cents, our thoughts, and how those interviews have affected us.
I hope that in doing this, we offer a couple of highlights about each of the people we got to interview, and maybe somebody's interested in listening to a podcast that they hadn't been before.
To start with, we're just going to kind of lump these interviews together and then talk about a few points from each one. So the first four really kind of go together, and they were about the film and what we experienced with the film.
Yep, that's really our process for anybody that's super interested in what we've done to date and how we've gotten to where we are and the ups and downs and points along the way. So if you're interested, that was John and Nelson talking profusely.
And for those of you at home, which is all of you, John and I, we always have this debate about if people want to hear process or not, and we go back and forth. And I think it's interesting to hear like what we went through to make the film so far, and it's hard to balance that with the actual storytelling part and to not bore you to death.
Well, and you're also interested in process.
I am. I'm a very process oriented person. So like how you make something is very interesting to me. So
of course. So well, that's the first four episodes.
It's process. It's kind of why we started this thing, what we've done so far, our experiences, and our vision as well, where we're going with it, right?
Yep. And then after that, we had a great opportunity to interview your mother, Margaret Ward.
And she's the author of Missing Mila, Finding Family, which is a book about my adoption and reunion, and she did an amazing job.
It was great to start with her because I think she's really... The point of this podcast is to put ourselves out and make ourselves a little bit vulnerable, and she certainly has done that with her book. I mean, she puts your family's lives on the pages of it, and you know, she's someone who's very loving mother who spent it's a very loving story to spend the time and effort that she did to get the story down on paper, to research it, to ask everybody about it, and that's really amazing. And
yeah.
And it's neat. It's it's kindred with what we're doing and comes before what we're doing, and what we're doing really complements it and builds on it. And what's also great about interviewing her is she's your mom, and yet in telling the story, she's had to encounter a lot of tough truths about El Salvador and your life that's hard to look at, hard to chronicle, hard to get into, and she faced them very honestly and spoke about it in the podcast, and that was really neat to get to. Every one of these is a privilege, and to get to interview somebody who's doing that is to me is really neat.
You know, that made me think just now, you know, the reason that we're kind of doing this, like everything that we're doing, is to kind of highlight the impact that the war had on various different people, and kind of the theme, I think unintentionally, has been that, you know, here are we talked to my mother, we talked to Ralph Sprankles, who we'll get to next, we talked to my brother Derek, and we talked to Donnie, and each one of them was impacted by the war in a different way. And it's kind of, you know, we're hearing from them how it's affected them. And as you said, my mother had to deal with these very difficult, larger than life questions about the war and sort of her involvement as a citizen of a country and a well-informed person. It was interesting to hear that she felt like she could have done more to understand the situation at the time.
You know, conducting all those interviews and you know, she is family with the Escobars and the Cotos and probably being family with these people who aren't blood relatives gives you a different perspective on who us is and what, you know, citizens of the world versus citizens of the US or in caring about people that went through a war situation. I think it just helps put give you a, obviously you can't understand what they're going through, but it just gives you a lot more empathy and concern.
John, was there anything that stood out to you in that interview? Anything that my mother said about her experiences that just, you know, really connected with you or made you think about something?
Yeah, I thought that she was really honest about we talked for a fair amount about Mama Chila and how inspiring she was and what she went through looking for you for all those years. And I just thought your mother was very honest about the impression that Mama Chila made on her and I mean, having, you know, raised you as your mom and then finding somebody on the other side of you that was looking for you for all those years. I just thought your mother was really emotionally honest about that, and I thought that was I was glad she shared that with us.
I think for me, it was surprising to hear how well she articulated the struggle that I have sometimes with her, or the way that she said these issues of identity, you're always dealing with them and they always resurface. And you know, you think you've gotten over something and then something happens and all the feelings come like crashing back. And that is certainly something that I've felt many a times throughout the year. And it was just it was fascinating to hear her say it, maybe even better than I could, and I've probably experienced it a lot more. So I thought that that was kind of the highlight for me. And then the other thing is just how excited she was about the question. You know, we asked her, you are someone who's seen more of the behind the scenes footage that we haven't been able to share with everyone else. And she was just so excited to be able to share her opinion about that. And you know, so that was fun. I was glad that she enjoyed that.
She gave us a great start, and then our second interview was equally exciting, which was getting to talk to Ralph Sprenkles. Ralph Sprenkles was the lead investigator on your case for Probuscida. And Probuscida, for those who don't know, is the main aid organization that has over the years reunited, I think, you know, in between 300 and 400, not there's different statistics. They've found in the high 300s of people, and I think there's been over 250 reunions. Some people chose
Yeah.
not to be reunited, but
Or
you know, he was,
some of them died and could not be reunited.
yeah
So I th think
yeah
that the term is around 350 solved cases, and then there are
And then
500 or more outstanding.
open cases. And
Right.
it to me, it's just amazing to get to interview him because he's made such a direct impact on the lives of thousands of people. And he's about my age. And, you know, when I was in college, he decided to go to El Salvador, you know, right after a war when it was really a broken country and a scary place. And he has just done some amazing things. I wish more people knew of his example, you know. And he wrote a book that you know is published under Probuscida about a lot of the early cases, I believe. And worked very closely with John Cortina, who is really the face of Pro Buscita, and he was the other co-founder. He was a Jesuit priest who was friends with Oscar Romero and was a driving force for finding all these children.
What was fascinating to me about that, those two interviews, was the way that it was revealed to us that he kind of walked into this position. You know, I guess I've never really talked to him before this, so there's no way that I would know this, but I guess you have this assumption when you have the title of lead investigator that you're somehow like, you go to school for that and that you decide to go to this country and you take on this role. And what we learned in the interview was that he really kind of fell into this, that he was there.
I wouldn't say he fell into it.
Well, just no, I guess what surprised, like, he was there doing human rights work, but
yes,
it wasn't like he went there and said, I'm going to be the lead investigator of Pro B. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it was,
which is even more inspiring. Like, I mean, they came to the situation and figured out where they could make the most impact, and this is what sprung of it, you know?
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know, for whatever reason, I just had this picture in my head that, like, you know, he went to El Salvador to be this investigator, and it was more of like he went there to do human rights, and this opportunity to be an investigator came up, and that's how I guess that's the way that I can explain it.
You mentioned it when you were talking with him, and I kind of thought, okay, is this because when you got that package, it's probably, you know, it will always be one of the most important moments in your life. And it was so just, it shattered what was before and something new was going to come after, right? And is it just because you think it's sort of, okay, you expect, you know, it's like a dictate from God almost. Like, you know, you're just expecting like the UN to be behind it or something. Is that sort of what you're expressing, or?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, because I guess you have the sense of it being more formal, or, you know, like, mm-hmm. Here's this, you know, Physicians for the Human Rights is working with this organization in El Salvador, and the lead investigator on the case is this person, and here's the formal report, and this is what happened. So you have all of these things that are telling you that this was like a, you know, an organization that was brought into existence with purpose, and kind of what you realize is that they were there and they sort of fell into it. And, you know,
I'd almost say fell into it's the wrong word, though.
Well, then how would you describe it?
Because, I thought, like, to me, his interview was amazing. And where it got really amazing was when he said, here's how Pro B started, right? Mm. I mean, he didn't use those words, but when he starts to tell that story, and he was off, like, El Salvador did a truth commission report. They did some type of process that, you know, like after our civil war, you know, way back when, we had reconstruction and we had certain processes where you're trying to rebuild a country where everybody's been shooting at each other for years, you know? And so they had a truth commission report, which was going to try and document the atrocities. And he was working on that report. And because of the internal politics of that report, because both sides, the guerrillas and the government, didn't want certain things discussed, because both their hands were dirty and both were afraid of prosecutions. In a war, there were a lot of atrocities, even if they were very one-sided. You know, the guerrillas also had their hands dirty. You know, they had chosen methods of war that weren't, you know, weren't always noble. You know, and maybe their cause was noble and maybe they did a lot of good things, but they did some bad things too. Maybe it was 5% versus 95%, but the point he was making was on both sides, some of the worst stuff didn't get discussed outright. And one of those things was that children were kidnapped and ran, and sold off. Or the point was, like, it was unspeakable at the time, right? And people outside of the people it happened to, it didn't happen, quote unquote.
Yeah. I
And
mean,
they've, they, sorry.
no, I was just gonna say that kind of shocked me as well. That again, maybe it's my own perception of whatever, it's my perceptions of this person and what I thought he did at the time. But it surprised me to hear that most people didn't know about the disappeared children, or that it wasn't talked about, and it came out through this truth commission,
It
whereas,
came out through he and John Cortina and the families
right,
of the disappeared.
yeah,
Like, the Truth
and
Commission didn't address it,
right,
although
well,
it came out through his work on the Truth Commission.
right, where he wanted the villagers to be able to tell their story, so he went and started recording them, and then he started hearing over and over again that these children were missing, and to I guess it just surprised me that it was the way it unraveled, as opposed to there were disappeared children in El Salvador, and Ralph Sprenkles came from some foreign land and decided to be an investigator on this cause, and how he was more in the middle of it and it unfolded. I think that's what I'm trying to articulate is.
Okay. You know what I'd liken that back to from my own experience,
Sure.
just in trying to understand it, was I remember in college I read a book called Parting the Waters, which is Taylor Branch, and there's three books to it now, I think, and the first one was follows Martin Luther King's life and tells the beginning of the civil rights movement. And what amazed, I remember reading that book and just being amazed when they do the Birmingham bus boycott, how messy it was. And I'm not saying that in a derogatory way. Like, a lot of people couldn't do the boycott because they had to go to work, and there was sloughing of funds, and like, it wasn't perfect is my point. And it was really empowering to me to hear that, because it's like, okay, in my life, I think there's nothing interesting. As a teenager, when I was reading it, it's like, oh, my life's so boring, nothing's happening. And then you read about this, and you're like, well, maybe my life's not so boring. Maybe, like, change is messy, and maybe there's a lot of real people involved, and it takes time, and there's give and take and back and forth, and it's not all, pretty and good. And I'm not saying that his work on the Truth Commission wasn't all pretty and good, but I'm saying, like,
That the way that it unfolded wasn't, like
it was,
this movie script perfect scenario. It was just,
yeah, well, it was real and had small origins, and to me, that's the most inspiring thing. To me, that is what makes his that story so worthy of being told, is here were these people who had suffered in the countryside silently. Most of them had lost their kids at the beginning of the war 10 to 12 years ago, and they get this chance to tell their story, and they tell it, and right after the war, where it's been dangerous to talk at all, and it's recorded, and they record these horrible stories, and they think something's going to be done about it, and it goes to this Truth Commission, and then the Truth Commission buries it. I mean, oh my God, right? And then here, and then how it's kind of like what Derek says in a future podcast, like, how could you do anything but focus on these stories after that?
Yeah.
Is if you can't help with these stories, what the hell else can you do with your country?
Yeah.
And so to me, he's a real hero. That's why it's so amazing, like, and to hear him tell that story of of how Pro B started and how they literally, and you know, they had heard some stories about how some of these kids might be in an orphanage in the capital, and they like loaded a bunch of people up onto like flatbeds and, or a bus or something, and they just drove to the orphanage and they said, "We know they're here."
Yeah.
And like the orphanage director wouldn't let them in, and there was, you know, a confrontation or something, and then the UN had to get involved. It's like, that's amazing. And then they found five kids, and more people started coming to them, and it wasn't just from the area at Chalatenango where they had been, but other parts of the country. And out of that, you know, you have this lasting impact.
It's fascinating to hear, and I'll take it in a different direction.
I like to talk about it.
Yeah. Well, that's why we're doing this, right? Because I think that it's great to have your
voice. I
think
this podcast should have like a million views. Like, and, you know, it's an amazing story. Like, I don't know. I don't understand why people don't look at some of the stuff that happened at the end of the Cold War in Latin America and look at like the civil rights struggle that's going on and see it in the same vein as we see our own civil rights struggle in America.
But do you think part of it is that people want a somewhat polished story? You know, that just came to mind right now.
That a lot of these people speak Spanish, and our own understanding of the Cold War is very skewed. And I don't think people have the context for it. And I think that there's a language barrier. And I think that I don't know. I think they should. I hope at some point, as the demographics of the United States start to change and become more Latino, I hope that these stories get more focus.
Yeah. So I'll just throw in my two cents, and then we'll move on to the next episode that we did. But, you know, I kind of liken it to being a camp counselor. You know, I went to summer camp for many years, and you were my counselor. And as a camper, you have this impression that everything is so well organized. You know, you have an evening activity, and, you know, everyone knows what they're doing. And then you become a counselor and you realize we're all sort of making it up as you go along. And like evening activity is done 5 minutes before it's ready to go on, you know? And the show goes on, not because you're ready, but because it's time, you know? Mm-hmm. So like that was an interesting lesson for me. And I think it's just until I hear the story of Martin Luther King or Ralph Sprankles or anyone else, you have this perception that everything is very well organized and run. And then you're sort of surprised when it's the messy reality of
when
life.
It took place the way it took place.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey there, this is Nelson. I've decided to take this episode and chop it into two parts based on some feedback that I received. This sounded like a good idea. So we're going to do two 20-minute episodes. This is part one. Next week will be part two of our recap episode, and we will talk about living with two identities, the episode with Derek, and the interview that I did with Donnie. So look out for that. And speaking of my niece, it is her birthday today, so I'm going to wish her a happy birthday. And she's actually standing next to me as I record this. So happy birthday, Donnie. Hope it's a good one. Anyway, we will see you next week. As always, please subscribe on iTunes. Leave us some feedback on Facebook/Identifying Nelson. Share the show with anyone that you think would enjoy it. And tune in next week for part two of our recap episode.
Cue the music.